دولة سياسية أو النخبة السياسية الحاكمة في روسيا، إضافة إلى مقاربته للوضع الميداني في الحرب الجارية الآن بين روسيا والغرب على أرض أوكرانيا. وكل هذا في إطار هذه الحلقة، عسى أن تستفيدوا منها. وننتقل إلى البروفيسور دوغن لنبدأ الحوار معه. Professor Dugin, first I would like to ask you about the reasons, the direct reasons for the rebellion of the Wagner paramilitary group against the Russian authorities during last week.
It's very difficult to understand, to explain. I think that in Russia, we still don't have the clear and transparent picture of what was that rebellion. It was very strange because it seemed from the beginning that that was the some misunderstanding inside of the heroic group of the fighters in Ukrainian front line between heroic fighters of Wagner Group and the our Minister of Defense Shoigu and the Chief of General Staff, as that started as a kind of a quarrel on the ground. For example, yeah. Both sides proposed their own. Mutual accusations, or that didn't have any political or ideological background. But when it all started, Wagner Group has concentrated on them the demand of of many expectations of the large part of population. For example, the demand for social justice that is not too high, a level of social justice is not in any sense too high in modern Russian society. Well, the other aspect of some criticism against the military chief of Russia that was originated in the front, above all after the some step back in Kharkov, around Kiev, so the exit from Kherson city that was under our control, all that has accumulated some criticism against the military chief, and Wagner rebellion was a kind of common common denominator for all that, a general misinterpretation and some criticism and lack of understanding and demand for social justice. But that was not directed against Putin. That is very important, because that was much more as a military version of popular claim, popular march for Tsar, known in our history, when the people wanted to convey, to transmit to Tsar some problems. And that wasn't against Tsar, that was against some people around him, around Tsar. So that was very Russian. And the solution was not military, that was political. And somehow Wagner personally was convinced to stop that, because he possessed very huge amount of power in this march. And he has shown a great strategic skill that helped to him to win a very, very important struggles inside of Ukraine, in Bakhmut, in other cities. So I think that Wagner has demonstrated, and Prigozhin has demonstrated, a great skill, military and strategical skill. And situation was solved by political intervention of Putin directly. Putin and Lukashenko, they have transformed together a kind of rebellion, military putsch, in some protest that has ended without blood, without starting the real civil war. But we were on the edge of real civil war. So in Lebanon, it is very known. Maybe in Europe, civil war is something exotic and already forgotten. But such things happen. And we need to accept the reality, sometimes in the contradiction of society, arrive at the point of this something like civil war. But this time, that was avoided. And I think that after all, now the Kremlin and Putin will be somehow obliged to take many demands from Prigozhin and Wagner, and to fulfill and realize their claim for more social justice, more political mobilization of society. But I think that the mission of Shoigu and Gerasimov will not follow. I think because that will be the demonstration of weakness, and Putin is not weak. He has proved to be strong enough to prevent civil war, to avoid it. I hope he will be very attentive to this demand of social justice and patriotic mobilization of society. And I think that already it is known that all participants of Wagner Group are pardoned. They are forgiven. So they will be not persecuted. They could find their place once more in the front, another group, military group, and there will be no juridical persecution of Prigozhin himself. So that was solved, I think. But huge changes will follow, and I think they will be very positive.
Professor Dugin, this event, is it a single accident, or does it reflect a deeper crisis within the ranks and files of the Russian ruling elite?
We could say that second, that there is this serious problem inside the ruling elite of Russia, because the part of this elite is totally unhappy with the special military operation. They consider themselves to be the part of the Western world. They wanted to enter European Union, to get closer to the West, And they don't understand absolutely the reasons of Putin to start special military operation. And there is this split. And Wagner revolting against Putin was somehow in line with him, much more than in line with elite. And the only reason to organize this march was a kind of hatred against some part of the ruling elite not ready to enter fully in the front to turn into this military way of thinking, of living. And Wagner, Prigozhin, personally, he is oligarch. He is part of ruling class who has shown what position of patriotic Russian representative of the ruling class should behave, how it should he should behave. So that was a kind of example of split of the ruling class, partly in favor of Putin and the victory, and the other part as ineffective or sabotaging or just not in tune with the historical, very, very, very difficult moment where we are. So that was not against Putin. That was a kind of revolt inside of the ruling class.
Yeah.
And the split between partisan of the victory and the partisan of the treacherous pact humiliating peace, as we call it in Russia. But finally, the most in tune with Putin himself now revolted formally against Putin. So that was a kind of paradox. That is not a linear line of chain of events, but rather Russian very, very complicated specific situation. And that wasn't against Putin, and that was in favor of the victory. So with Putin, not without Putin. But formally, it could look like attack against Putin. I agree.
Professor Dugin, you alluded in your posts and in the first two answers to the fact that there is a cultural and ideological dimension for the conflict between Russia and the West in Ukraine. To what extent the Russian ruling elite is aware of this dimension, especially what we call the oligarchs?
So, first of all, in my description of the situation, I emphasize that the main map, civilizational map, geopolitical conflict with some deep dimension concerning the civilizational principles, so more or less in accordance with general geopolitics or the concept of Huntington of clash of civilization. So that is more or less objective description, I would say. And that description, objective description, is becoming more and more accepted by Russian ruling class. So the problem is we could say that there are growing number of the representatives of ruling class in Russia who understand this civilizational dimension of the special military operation. So that is growing number, and I see more and more and more people who understand what is going on. On the other hand, more they understand, more they pronounce statements more or less in the harmony with this direction. So we could find the same approach in Putin's words. We could find the same approach in the main strategical documents of Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Russia, and in the Strategy of National Defense, and in many other official documents, for example, decree of the defense, of political defense, of traditional values, for example, signed by Putin. So it is more or less this vision that we are fighting for multipolarity against unipolarity, for traditional values against liberal hegemony. It is more or less now official position of the state. So that is why I have changed my position inside of political elite from more or less marginal after 2014, when I insisted on continuation of the liberation of Novorossiya, and Kremlin had different point of view, so I was marginalized. And after now, I'm rather stay in tune with the main line. So that now I am considered to transmit the position of the ruling class, of the political elite. And but at the same time, there are two kind more of representative of this ruling class. For example, there are people who could not understand civilizational dimension at all. So they consider the situation under other angle, and it is more or less arbitrary, this angle. For example, they could give economic explanation, ethnic, historic, the conspiracy theory. So if they don't possess the capacity, possibility to grasp geopolitical or civilizational dimension, so they are obliged to follow some secondary hermeneutic of this war. And other parts are liberals who are against that. They could not today, they could not announce that openly. So openly, only position more or less with mine is legitimate. But I think that there are many people who understand the situation, but who are in ruling class in favor of immediately to stop that, to finish that, because they consider themselves to be the part of Western civilization, of modern and postmodern West, and they consider themselves to be organic parts of this West. They are by the chance inside of Russia, who is now in a conflict, and they don't share ideologically the thesis that our society is traditional, that traditional values should be defended. They are against that, but they could not now. We have such ambience, ideological ambience now in Russia, that they could not dare to say this openly. But they still, I think, they hate this conflict precisely because they belong to the other camp, but they are afraid to start rebellion against Putin because they understand that Putin is strong and that majority of population supports patriotic line. That is why rebellion of ultra-patriotic Wagner was more or less successful, more or less, because it was not defeat, military defeat, and the people, the part of the people, was in favor of Wagner, for example. Patriotism has a great legitimacy inside of Russian society, and liberals has no legitimacy at all. For example, any protests of any kind basing on liberalism will be immediately destroyed and finished with no support, with zero support from population. So the only way to challenge Putin's position is to propose the more patriotic version, as we have seen in Wagner case. And this part of the liberal segment of our ruling class has no chance of general support, and they are obliged to follow Putin and to keep silence, for example, or repeating superficially the same explanation that I give and I share.
Well, do you think, in your opinion, that this rebellion, which ended not to the favor of Prigozhin, do you think that it will eventually backfire on the liberal elements within the ranks and files of the Russian ruling elite?
I think they feel themselves in a very weak position. For example, the situation has proven that the choice is between Putin and Prigozhin, between moderate patriotism, but with the leader who started the special military operation, and the more radical patriotism of Wagner Group. So that is the real center of gravitude of our society. So our society is much more patriotic than ruling class. And many liberals that before maybe were very, very irritated by Putin, now they reconsider their position, because that is only Putin who can save them, because the situation in society is so anti-liberal that they could hide themselves only behind the shoulders of Putin, and not by themselves. They will be the goals of any popular rebellion, and they will be destroyed first. For example, the people of Wagner March declared that first they will attack, coming to Moscow, Rublevskaya Shosse, Rublevka. That is the place where oligarchs and ruling class lives. And that was accepted with the great joy of population, because everybody dreamed to destroy oligarchy in Russia, the normal people. So I think the liberals now, they go away from Russia, or understand that the Putin is their only hope for them. So they will change their mind, because the factor of Prigozhin is much more than the fact of this rebellion. It is the kind of sociological study, a kind of poll that has shown to the ruling class that their dream, their hopes of return to the liberal normalization of the situation should totally be abandoned.
Well, Professor Dugin, there is something that puzzles the public in general and puzzles me in person, which is the relationship between the Russian state on one hand and the oligarchs on the other hand. Are they the ones who control the state, or does the state use them as a tool to achieve its geopolitical objectives?
So Putin's strategy in that sense was as follows. In the 90s, they were the masters of the state. They corrupted the state and they were the real rulers, pro-Western, totally corrupted, controlling Yeltsin. From this position, Putin started, after his coming to power, he started to change this balance. So, for example, the most rebellious, most aggressive oligarchs were destroyed, as Gusinsky, Berezovsky, Khodorkovsky, Smolensky, and many other. And the other were submitted. They were put under control of the state, but Putin wanted to transform them more than that. He wanted not only neutralize them, but transform them in tools. So in his opinion, Russian oligarchs should serve as a tools for coming and growing power of Russian state. Maybe he thought that is American way, or maybe it is, at least that was his desire. And he partly succeeded in that. So he totally succeeded in neutralizing them and devoiding them of political influence, direct political power. But I think he didn't fully accomplish their transformation in tools. So they were masters, neutral, and they should be tools. And Prigozhin is precisely the first clear and bright example of what is the tool, how oligarch can be tool of state in difficult situation. And Prigozhin was very conscious about that, about his roles. He understood his not only mechanical role in all that, but symbolic. And he has gathered by that the great political capital. So he is very, very political strong. Maybe he is, after Putin and Lukashenko, third person with a huge political capital. So, and that was interesting because, and he was as well the result of full-scale transformation of oligarch into the tool. And this tool revolted against the master. That as well, that shows that how strong patriotic legitimacy is in Russia. Who expand patriotic agenda immediately acquires huge popular support, and liberals with all the money, with all controlled ministry and big finances, they are totally unpopular. And that is very interesting moment. And I think now Putin will change the strategy. So I think that he could not observe how unloyal these oligarchs still are. After all these years of trying to put them under control, they nevertheless they still follow their own personal individual interests. So Putin now has many examples of how unloyal these oligarchs are, and maybe I think he will decide in favor to give more weight to the state. Finally, the state will because the state is this instrument, and oligarch it's always vassal dependence. So that is some contract. You hire them, and you make contract with oligarch, and they that is not mechanically tool for you. So you could not transform oligarchs in mechanical tool of state, at least in Russian and Putin situation. So I think he is going to abandon this tradition and to finally to stop oligarchy as practice.
Well, I would like to move with you to the war that is going on in Ukraine between Russia on one hand and the West on the other hand. How do you evaluate the situation now, and what are the chances of Russia in this war?
So, first of all, that was not such success as many of us thought and dreamed of. So that was rather very modest victory over some territory of Nova Russia, not all territory. It is, we have liberated about half of territory of Nova Russia. So because Nova Russia consisted from this Crimea to Donbas republics, Kherson and Zaporozhye, but as well Odessa, Nikolaev, and Kharkov, at least. So,
I just want to ask if Poltava is part of this. So, do you think that the Russian territories or that were provided or given to Ukraine are all the regions that should be recuperated east of the Dnieper River?
It is not exactly because the part Odessa is on the right.
Yeah, except for Odessa and some parts, but I mean in majority.
Yes, but I think that Poltava is problematic, but we didn't still liberate something that is organically belongs historically, socially, to Novorossiya. Odessa, Nikolaev, and Kharkov, that is the part of Russian liberated from Turks territories. Because we didn't achieve the least goals, we didn't yet liberate Donbas. We liberate Donbas. So we are not in good shape, I would say. And maybe because of this consolidation of NATO, maybe of underestimation of Ukraine and motivation, we didn't take in consideration the power of nationalism. So Russian more or less liberal government didn't take seriously nationalism, neither in Russia nor in Ukraine, and it was considered as some exotic marginal extremist tendency, and nobody could imagine such kind of nationalist frenzy in or such distribution of neo-Nazi ideology, Russophobia, racism, and so on. Everybody thought that belonged to the history, to Germany, to Italy of 30, but not to modernity. And everybody was absolutely sure that the West didn't let that to happen. So this transformation of Ukrainian society. So we have missed many important points. We didn't prepare to fight this war. We our government counted on some support from Ukrainian oligarchs and some political power after the first strike. And I think that was the huge disappointment for Putin, for Kremlin, the results, very modest results of this 1 year and a half war in Ukraine. So I think as well, our society and our government cannot still now cannot decide in favor of total militarization of our society, militarization of spirit, of economy, of industry, of education, and they try to keep the kind of balance. So peaceful life on Russian territory and war that becomes more and more radical, more and more brutal and cruel in the Ukraine. And I think that is and was from the beginning wrong strategy. So we need to prepare better to mobilize our society and start that before, long before that. We have lost the situation, a great window of opportunity 2014, and Putin now recognizes that that was error, mistake made by him. So he believed in the Western promises, and they were false from the beginning. That was what I affirmed at that time, and because of my stubborn negative attitude to the West, I was considered to be kind of dangerous as well for inside of Russia. So because my position was always the same, and I followed not the rule, the order from the from above, from the state, but I am following my understanding, my search of truth, geopolitical truth, and historical truth. So and now it is clear that I was right, and almost everyone in our society recognizes now that. But nevertheless, I would say that we are losing the time as before, and we obviously we have the last argument is a nuclear weapon, and the West underestimates the decisiveness of us to use it, but we are going to use it only if our defeat will be clear and inevitable. So, for example, the real success of Ukrainian army supported by the West could easily lead to total destruction of the planet. So, but only that, because Russia could not afford, could not accept the loss of war. It will be incompatible with Russian state, with Russian political system. So, because we are now dealing with existential threats. So, either we win or humanity will be destroyed. So that is, I'm very sorry to say that, but that is truth. But in any other cases, for example, if we conserve the balance, or better, if we continue to get into the West, that is the reason to avoid nuclear apocalypse. So it is blackmail, maybe, but we are obliged. Any war is blackmail, finally. So if you don't accept your defeat, we are going to fight you. That is blackmail. The war is blackmail. So we will use this weapon in if we will have no other option. And realistically, we are going to use nuclear weapon not in order to win, but in order not to let the West win. And we are going to pay absolute price for that. That is very important. That is not pure words. That is a big and iron will, not only of Putin, but will and logic of Russian history. So, before we reach this point of no return, many other solutions are possible. For example, to frozen the conflict in the present border. I hate this solution, but under some conditions, we could not exclude that. Second, liberation of Novorossiya, full Novorossiya, that will mean enough as the victory for in order to convince the people that the war is won, and that is very important. But I think nobody will let us to stop in such position, because Ukrainians will counter attack at any situation, and will be obliged to go until the end. And the end, in our understanding, the end is precisely reaching the border of Poland and not coming into direct confrontation with NATO. So liberation full territory of Ukraine and stop there. So what is as well very important to understand, that nuclear weapon, it will be the last solution if Ukraine counter-attack against Russian position or Crimea or Belgorod or Donbas will be successful. If it happens, we consider seriously to destroy the humanity. If we could consider three possibility when Russia, or conditions under which Russia could examine or regard or ponder on possibility of peace. First of all, frozen boundaries that exist now, liberation of Novorossiya, or total control over Ukraine, not farther. So that is the last line. So everybody in Russia will be totally satisfied with liberation of Ukraine and will let alone Europe, because the European Union is not the goal in any sense. That is realistic understanding, but everything could happen, as for example, military rebellion one week ago. So Russia is not in too stable position, I would say. There is a kind of turbulence inside of our society, and therefore the kind of stability could be reached only on the condition of liberation of the Ukraine. So that will be hard stability, half Ukraine not so hard stability, frozening of the boundaries and stopping counterattack of Ukraine. That will be not too stable stability, but now we're worse, or even worse situation. So I think to finish, I think that counterattack of Ukraine now is not successful at all for them. It is not easy practice, easy journey for us as well. We are losing people. It is very hard fights, the hardest during all this war. But nevertheless, Russia stays. So acquirement of territories by Ukrainian forces is miserable. So. Near to zero, some kilometers in the gray zone, some kilometer lost. So it is it could be considered in any sense successful. It is a rather disaster. It is not over yet, but Russia proves to be very, very strong in defense. Now we demonstrate how easy it is to defend the well-constructed positions. And that was the lesson we were told by violent defense of Ukrainians inside of Donbas. So in the line where they prepared to defend their positions, Ukrainians were and still are very strong, and our attack was on the first moment very successful, but precisely the lack of this defense infrastructure was the reason of many losses on our side. Now we have told this lesson. And I think that we defend ourselves against this counterattack relatively well. But the loss on the Ukrainian side are really huge, really huge. They are losing almost by armies during this conflict. And I think if we stay strong until the end of this counterattack, that will mean military defeat of Ukraine, because many technical, and in spite of all the technical support by the West, but there are some practical reasons why they could not use fully the technical skills and other problem. They could not use many of this military power. And I think that if we stay until the autumn, or maybe on the more or less in the same position, that will be great strategical victory for Russia, because after that, the growing defeat of Ukraine will be very, very, very likely, I would say. Not sure, because the war is war, and that is very, very bloody and savage and difficult war for us. We weren't prepared for that. We weren't ready for that. And we transform our country, our army on the way, on the fly. So not beforehand. So we are obliged to fight a war we weren't prepared to. So that is a very, very difficult and hard experience for us.
Well, you said that this war is a war that Russia doesn't have the luxury or the possibility to lose. And we are used to Russia waging long wars before achieving victory and enduring lots of sacrifices before achieving victory, whether it was during the Second World War against Nazi Germany, or during the early 19th century against Napoleon Bonaparte, or even during the early 18th century in the war against Sweden. So what are the chances for Russia to win this war? And to what extent you think that Russia is moving towards more national awareness that would help it go for full mobilization of its resources in this war?
I think that this war will last longer. So, and in long term, long wars, Russia always win with great sacrifices, I agree, with great losses. Now it is a big transformation of Russian society, of Russian ideology, of Russian political system as well, because now we have understanding finally that we are not the part of Western civilization, and that is huge discovery. It's something like a kind of eruption, explosion of self-consciousness that was totally blocked 100 years before. Communists considered the Russia to be the part of the Western and global humanity, progressive and so on, and liberals, that was their dogma, that Russia is delayed and European country, retarded European country. And now we discover that Slavophiles and Dostoevsky and Eurasianists and Russian conservatives were right, that Russia is particular civilization based on traditional values and not the part of the global West. So that is a huge discovery. That is more important on the long term than, for example, the balance of power in the present conflict. So because it's long-standing understanding. So it is very, something very, very deep. And that coincide with mobilization, with national consciousness, with growth of understanding of our identity, that provokes the thoughts about the fate of the destiny of the history. So historical history is under question. Before, history coincided with the Western and Western progress. So the fate of the West was the way the fate of humanity, as the West pretended and still pretends, and everybody else more or less accept and agree with. But we except maybe radical Islamists, for example, or some traditionalists, generally elite all over the world were in accordance, in tune with this understanding that the destiny of the West is the same as the destiny of humanity. And there is only one civilization, Western civilization, that is universal, and everybody is welcome to turn into the path of this civilization. That is globalization, precisely. And now, Russia, a big country with huge resources, with huge territory, with nuclear weapon, maybe not so strong as it looked like before, but strong enough to fight against NATO in Ukraine, strong enough, now rejects this claim. And that is revolution. That is multipolar revolution, in conflict of civilizations. We discovered that there is not only one civilization, but a few civilizations, and Russia is one of them, fighting against this pretension of the West to be the only one civilization. And China staying more or less aside, but observing very carefully what is going on, because it affects everybody. It will affect China. The results of this war will affect humanity. And that is why many Islamic countries, many African countries, many Latin American countries, India as well, Pakistan, try to find their way in this multipolar structure outlined already by Russia. So this conflict outlines before its end this possibility of multipolarity, and everybody is this time is invited to find their own sovereignty, their own zone of influence. It could be very difficult to rebuild the world on the multipolar basis, but that gives a huge opportunity for everybody. And I think that is why Russia now is undergoing very important change in the consciousness in the society.
Professor Dugin, thank you very much for your insights and for being our guest in this show. And we hope that we could meet you in future interviews, hopefully in the upcoming few months.
Okay, best wishes. Best wishes.
Same to you. Have a nice day.
أعزائنا المشاهدين، كنا قد أجرينا هذه المقابلة الخاصة مع البروفيسور ألكسندر دوغن المفكر والأيديولوج الروسي حول ما جرى من تمرد عسكري في روسيا، وحول بنية السلطة الروسية وعلاقة الدولة الروسية بالأوليغارشية النافذة في هذا البلد، إضافة إلى توقعاته بشأن الحرب الجارية الآن بين روسيا والغرب في أوكرانيا. عسى أن تكونوا قد استفدتم من كل هذه المعلومات ومن مقاربات البروفيسور دوغن، على أن نلقاكم بحلقات مقبلة من برنامج استراتيجيا.